are coming. You can't come in.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Filipino Fridays podcast. I am your host, OJ.
It's Archie. Hey.
And it's Archia.
And today we have a special episode for you guys nearing the end of the year. But before we introduce him, I want to ask my co-host, what do you think of art? What is the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word art?
For me, it's visual arts, like painting and drawing, sculptures. How about you, Archia?
Mine would be probably performing arts, because I'm a dancer, and singing and songs and music, all of that. What about you, OJ?
I think of origami and beautiful women.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, you know the vibes, man. You know what it is.
The beautiful sculptures of women. Yeah, man. Women make the best subjects. I'm just saying.
They're so beautiful, and I think about them all the time, especially my girlfriend.
And there's also, obviously, we're such huge fans of, like, you know, cinema, right? Like movies and audio, like what we're doing now. I would consider this is a type of art expression that we're doing. For sure. So a little bit about our guest for this episode, which discusses the future of Filipino art. So Czar, or in his artist name, which is 0270501, he is considered the human embodiment of having too many tabs open in a web browser. And here's how we'll break that down a little bit. So our featured artist for our guest episode, he is definitely involved with concept art, with abstract paintings, and he also does experimental music. But he'll talk a little bit about that in the episode. So we really get into talking about expression, art expression, as a Filipino. And I'm sure many of you other creatives out there, you know, sometimes maybe wonder, like, how come my art is not considered to be Filipino enough, right? Like, how about you guys? What are your thoughts about that? You know, no matter what we do, whether it's in art, in music, in language, in certain parts of our cultural identity, how come that question still keeps on coming up, eh? How come we always face the question, why am I not considered Filipino enough in what I'm doing? You know, we obviously discussed it in our first episode, but what are your thoughts on that, on why that seems to be a regular issue we face nowadays?
I think it's just because we hate each other. That's facts. We just hate each other. We just hate each other. We only come together when, you know, it's time for elections, or when Manny Pacquiao fights, or when it's New Year's. But I think it's just embedded in our
culture.
In our culture, in our DNA, our DNA code, actually, to not be supportive.
Yeah, it's a hard truth. There's not enough love in the culture, in our community, for each other. And that's why we face this question all the time. Like, why am I not Filipino enough? Why is that even a question, right? And we mentioned that in the first episode. It's still coming up, and we're on our 10th. So, you know, we're still continuing to put in the work and having this tough conversations with you all, keeping it real, that we need to support each other and believe in each other, lift each other up, especially in different kinds of, you know, art forms, whether it's music, movies, in this case, visual arts, fine arts, right? It's like, let's be proud to push each other forward, you know, in the way someone is creative, in the way that they curate food, in the way that someone is creative, in the way that they curate fashion, or the way that they express themselves as a Filipino. Let's just show love for each other. And that's really what we're here to do. So, you know, I just got to say thank you to everybody that continues to reach out and show us some love. You know, recently we got in touch with one of our listeners who really shared a compelling story about how listening to our episodes has really impacted his life in a regular basis, where he's applied it to the way he approaches things, of course, with love. Yeah, so thank you so much for letting us know how much it's really resonated with you. You know, we definitely set out to connect with our community and help bridge some cultural gaps. And please continue to DM us, email us, tell us how, you know, the episodes have resonated with your daily lives, or how you've been able to answer some questions with your fellow families and friends, or brought up some conversations that you've never had before, in order to build that Filipino connection. So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, guys. You know, also one of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast with my cousins is, you know, I've had always these thoughts in my mind, and I want my ideas and my thoughts to be more stimulating, have more knowledge. So I dive into these like self-learning sessions by myself, and if ever I'm able to educate myself and our listeners, and vice versa, you guys can teach us something. We're all gonna move forward and move away from, you know, me especially talking smack about our culture, because I feel like that's what I end up doing all the time.
We're unlearning whatever negativity we've all learned how to be and do in our culture, right?
Yeah.
Then for myself, it's kind of like I haven't really been immersed into like Filipino history and like background, like deep diving into it before. And so it's the first time of me learning and I guess unlearning too at the same time. And it's kind of cool, like seeing how things are playing out, especially with the podcast, and then being able to talk to people who listen to us and like hear the feedback that they want to provide for us.
Yeah, and they've shared their experiences, and you know, we're on your side. If there's something that you're wondering, there's something you want us to question in the podcast, hit us up. We got you, man. We're going to talk about it. We're not scared to talk about it. We're here to keep it real, but keep it real with love. So thank you so much to everybody for continuing to tune in to Filipino Fridays podcast. And with that, we're going to lead in right into our interview with our special guest. Thank you so much to DJ Czar. You can find him on YouTube, on Spotify. You can find his art at RU Czar or 0270501 on Google. Just look him up. So much pleasure and with the greatest honor, please welcome our special guest, DJ Czar.
My name is Czar. And I am an artist. And my name as an artist is 0270501, which is a bunch of numbers that may or may not mean a lot of things. But yeah, I think, you know, to keep it concise, hi, my name is Czar. Mm-hmm. I'm an artist.
And tell us where you're based and what type of art you do. I know you do dabble in a range, so, you know. I guess
it's a range. I'd like to say that I am a fine artist currently based in Manila. But for the past 5 years, I think I've been traveling around just putting up shows, installations, and works all around. Quite recently, have been doing some works all around Asia. And I'd like to say that my work falls under the abstract nature. Every now and then, I dabble into making music as well. I make experimental music. I also make, I guess, a lot of hip-hop these days. Because of the pandemic, I currently started learning and creating hip-hop music, which was one of my first loves growing up. But I did just release an EP in Spotify under a different moniker. This time it's called Little Happier. Just a fun play of words. I'm really proud of it because it was my pandemic project. I was able to create a bunch of songs immediately, and luckily enough, Spotify approved it, and here I am in Spotify as a Little Happier.
Congratulations. That's so awesome.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm actually really surprised because when I started this project, it was really much more of a, you know, just me blabbering around about some stuff, and I didn't know that people are gonna like it, and
just like us.
Yeah, just like you guys. I was so surprised that the response was way overwhelming than what I expected. But then again, I have very low expectations. So
that's awesome. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that this guy also has more range because he has coffee too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, I do. I do. If you guys are in Manila or anywhere in the Philippines, maybe, you can check out our little coffee brand. Is called Fueled by Cold Brew. Let me do the spiel. Hold on. Did you know some people can wake up in the morning, get straight to work, and be productive? Not me. I'm Fueled by Cold Brew.
There you go. Period.
There you go.
Our first ad, everybody.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I should have paid this.
Okay, well, you'll get
Manila.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm really proud of that Cold Brew brand because for years now I've been making my own coffee. Mm-hmm. And Cold Brew is one of the easiest thing to drink in the morning when you're in a hurry. You just pop it over ice and then gulp it down. And I guess I've been really, really into cold brew. lately that people started getting into it too. And again, because of the lockdown, people were just bored and they wanted to buy something to make them feel nice. So cold brew it is in the morning. Make yourself feel normal just a little bit.
Definitely. So, of course, you know, you've dabbled in fine art, abstract art, music, coffee, the art of coffee, right? We definitely want to ask you for all of these creative pursuits. You know, when did you discover your passion for creating art and music?
You know, that's really the funny question that I really love answering, because most people, when at least most artists I know, when they get asked about, oh, how did you start creating art? 99% would say, oh, you know, I was born and then when I was 3, I picked up a crayon and I just started drawing. Or like when I was 5, I really liked comics and I started drawing comics. But I guess I was kind of like a late bloomer because I only picked up a pencil and started to draw when I was 17, I think. So if you guys know about the 10,000 hour rule, if you've heard of that, I'm way behind. I don't think I've gotten my 10,000 hours yet, but for the past, how many is it now? 8 years that I've been creating art, I've been cramming those hours in. Mm-hmm. But when I was younger, like I said, I wasn't really much of an artist. It wasn't in my inclination. My family wasn't really an artist family, you know? Mm-hmm. When I was younger, all I really did was watch television and play video games. That's it. That was my biggest thing. Just going home from school and watch a lot of MTV, a bunch of anime, Cartoon Network, you know.
Yeah.
That was my main thing growing. I wasn't very good at school either. Mm-hmm. Later on, I realized it was because I had really bad ADHD, but when I was younger, all I did was watch a lot of TV. And I remember that my remote would always be broken, right? So this is like such a first world problem, but like going up to the TV and then pressing the button yourself just to switch through the channels. It's just, I would go from channel 7 to 100 every day. Mm-hmm. And the fun part is that I would go through these channels, but the images that I would see going, flipping through these channels, later on, I realized that that's how my visual library was built, was because of how much different images I would see and just different music. In a flash of a second, I would be, I still remember a lot of the things that I would be looking into, just random movies, random cartoons, random television show. And those are basically what I grew up on, you know? Mm-hmm. But going into high school, I'm sure this was a thing for most Asian kids. When you're in high school, you get really pressured of, hey, what are you going to take for college? Mm-hmm. What are you going to take for uni?
What are you going to be when you grow up?
What are you going to be? It's not like gap year isn't vocabulary here. So, you know, you really got to. And I remember my parents wanted me to take up engineering or something business, which I didn't, obviously, from where I am right now. I was a very stubborn kid. And my best friend at the time, he was the one who was an artist, you know. He was the one who was really drawing day in, day out. And I would be there, his number one fan, just talking to him. Hey, maybe we should draw this. Hey, maybe we should draw this Naruto character or something. So even though I didn't know how to draw, I followed him into uni where he took up animation, which I also did. But I immediately realized that was such a bad idea because I did not know how much drawing it takes to create an animation. You know, a single piece of like a second of your favorite anime or cartoon, it takes 32 drawings
in
1 second. And I learned that immediately. The moment I stepped into college going into animation, that was it. It's like, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? It was a really, really bad idea. But there was so much pressure, you know, trying to keep up. Because obviously, I don't want to fail a course that I stubbornly took. Mm-hmm. You know, there was that issue of ego. Like I went behind my parents' wishes of taking engineering or doctorate or business, went into animation, and then I'm gonna fail animation. Nah, I ain't gonna do that. So that was me. So I would you know, the 10,000 hour rule again. I crammed that within 1 year, I guess, that I would, the moment I would wake up, I would look up tutorials on how to draw faces. Until the moment I sleep, I'd be learning how to just keep on drawing, really, just keep on painting. And then I remember that was the moment that I realized that, hey, art is actually pretty kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know, minus the whole drawing a lot of different things every day, you know, just creating this visual thing is kind of fun, mm-hmm. you know. And then somewhere along that time in my uni days, I discovered that people can get paid to draw images for movies. And that was, at the time, it was so mind-blowing to me. I did not know that was possible.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's called concept art, you know. This was way back in, I think, 2011, 12. Mm-hmm. The landscape is way different back then, but that's how I started creating work that would eventually build my career, I guess, is that I painted some characters. Conveniently, they look like certain actors. And I posted them. I don't think this happens now because the landscape is way different. But back then, I posted in Facebook and DeviantArt. And by the next week, I got emails of people trying to hire me for the project. I'm like, hey, that's actually super freaking fun.
Wow. So,
yeah, this was really, really a stroke of luck, is what I always say.
I actually almost think that more of a manifestation. Like, once you discover something and then it lights that fire and then you actually devote the hours to it, it just, the universe manifests that energy. And so these opportunities come from what you were doing.
I guess so. You know, I wish I knew what manifestation was back then. Mm-hmm. So I would really, really be, to be honest, I guess I still carry the same energy of just, I'm just happy to be here. You know, I just feel lucky. Right? It's like, I think it's, you have to carry the same gratitude, and that's what makes it exciting and nice. So when those opportunities happen, I was still in college, right? Mm-hmm. I think I was in first year or second year when I started creating work for games and movies. I would be creating 5 to 10 images a day. That'll be like environments, just like images of characters. And I would be working in multiple projects at the same time. But the problem was, it feels like I haven't created anything because I can't show them.
Yeah.
So I before this conversation, I showed you a couple of my images. That was just like 5% of what I've created in my years. And the sad part is I don't even have access to them anymore, mm-hmm. because they were created in the company computer and I can't really bring them home with me.
Yeah.
They're property of the project or the company that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are just like legal realities that I learned on in the middle of my journey. But that really bugged me down, man. Working 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day.
Wow.
12 to 12 even sometimes. Just, and then creating that many paintings, it tires you out.
It burns you out for sure.
Quickly,
yeah.
Very quickly. It was just Monday to Saturday until just creating that type of that meticulousness you put into your work. And then, you know, you, of course, you put in your soul and your energy, and then just not being able to see them in the light of day. Although, you know, when the movies or the projects come out, it's really great.
Yeah.
Still, there's that.
It's a piece of yourself that you've surrendered.
Exactly.
No ownership of. Yeah. You have to sacrifice it.
Yeah. For years, I was in that stage until a director, a friend of mine, said that when he saw my paintings, he mentioned, hey, you should go into fine art. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't really thought about making fine art. Like, it was, I guess a lot of designers would love to be in the fine art industry.
Yeah.
Right? If you make art right now, like, the dream is to be inside of a gallery. Mm-hmm. And for me, back then as a younger artist, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to go into fine arts maybe when I'm 40, when I'm 50, you know, when I'm already old and collected. But apparently there's a lot of younger people who are getting themselves into fine art. Mm-hmm. And it's a very doable industry. It's a very open industry if you really work hard and do it. So when I started thinking that, when I started changing my perspective into what fine art was, that's when I discovered that there was this bigger conversation with myself of what type of art would I really want to make.
Is that when you decided that, okay, I'm going to break out on my own, and whatever that spills out of my heart, at least I can show it as my own?
Exactly. You
know, this is my talent, this is my world, this is my chance, yeah, to finally shine. Yeah.
Definitely. It's not really much of a shine thing. It's more of a, this is the type of work I want to grow old with, you know?
Aww. Yeah, it's your legacy. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like, when I started creating fine art, this opened a lot of conversations between myself and how I view myself, you know, and how I view the world, and how do I create these conversations about, well, it all starts from yourself, really. It's just growing up, I was raised in a Catholic environment, but my parents weren't Catholic. They were this another sector of Christianity. So I always have one step, I always have one foot out of the door in terms of society. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up in a Catholic school, but I'm not Catholic, so I always look at it with another lens. And when I started having this conversation about my own work, it just created this tangent into spirituality. I'd say it's a quasi-spiritual type of work, you know. I'm not really, it's on my own terms, but I don't know what I'm talking about yet, but I'm here laying down the groundwork so I can find out. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that's the type of work that I would be making right now. And I realized that because of the amount of work that I did in my early days as an artist, creating this very intricate designs of characters, I don't want to ever want to make realistic works anymore. So I went full 180 and then started creating abstract work, which was a bunch of splatters and random images that I would come up with. And I guess that kind of became the amalgamation of my work. And the idea that I would get paid to do this was just a big kind of a blessing and surprise to me that, you know, as an artist, when you're in school or when you're working, you're told constantly that, oh, you have to do this and this and this and that so you can reach this level.
Yeah.
You know? But then I realized that, you know, people shouldn't get discouraged from making stuff just because you think people are not going to like it, or the world, you're not ready for it, or the world's not there yet. Because once you understand that these things changes all the time, you know, like the world is, the perspective that the world has is always evolving. Mm-hmm. You can then find a way to tell your own story, you know, or create your own work. For example, when I saw this podcast online, not a lot of podcasts would deal about Filipino conversations.
Yeah.
We're not really in the limelight yet. Hopefully soon.
We're going to change that, man.
Yeah. We're going to change that. Yeah. You know, I actually read this article lately. It's about you know how for years and years now, Filipino food has always been the next big thing.
Yeah.
Always. Like, when is it actually going to be the next big thing, though?
But you know, you say that because we just did record a food episode, and he really said, you know, people have been saying that because it's the approach to our food, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is, for whoever is Filipino, there's also been a cultural, it was like such an amazing line. When you hear it, you'll know. He said there is such a cultural dilution with the younger generations because of the generational thinking of teaching somebody to assimilate and not become Filipino enough. Like,
right, right.
That it's caused something like a cultural dilution of our right. heritage, that now what he's trying to do with food is really push that narrative at the forefront. So I think you'll really enjoy that. But yeah, anyways, yeah, carry on. That's so amazing.
No, that's the thing. A lot of the creatives right now, or at least the ones that are aware of these things, or just that have this in their mindset, we are approaching almost the same summary. For years and years now, that's been the question: what is Filipino art? What is Filipino food? How is this? How are we going to share this to the world? And that's also the exciting part of it, because it hasn't been set yet. So it's up to us right now to push and define what it is.
Yeah, and like just jumping off of that, actually, which is a great way for us to segue into this next question, right? You know, you're creating abstract art, fine art. You know, what are the challenges of creating art that's not considered or identified as, you know, Filipino? So for our listeners, could you maybe elaborate the differences between what's considered Filipino identified art and your pieces?
Right. So here's the thing. It's normal, it's general, but once you say Filipino art, more or less the thing that the person's going to think of is probably a painting by Juan Luna, or Amorsolo art, or the Spolarium, or the dogs playing poker in a carpet behind your Lola's dining room.
On a bunny.
On a banana.
Tribal, exactly. Even. Yeah.
Or tribal art, the one that they get for tattoos.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all well and done. And those are amazing pieces of work.
It's part of our history. Yeah.
It's part of our history. And there's a certain respect to it. And yes, that the Filipino economy, when it comes to art collecting, which, by the way, Filipinos are actually really big on art collecting. In Asia, we're one of the biggest industries and economies in art collecting.
Wow.
Can you think of that? Third world country, and we collect so much art. Who knew? But yeah, that's a lot of what Filipinos collect and think when they think of art. And the thing with that is to be able to push art forward, to continue the economy of art or the industry of art.
To innovate.
To innovate, exactly. You have to keep moving forward. You can't always just look into the past masters, although again they are really amazing, and if you have one, good for you, you're probably uber rich. But to open this kind of conversation, we have to start looking forward of what is art now. Who are the artists, the Filipino artists, that are creating work these days, today, that are starting to create new perspectives or starting to create new conversations about what art is? And that's with food, with music, with visual, with movies. It all is one and the same, you know? To be able to push this forward, we have, as Filipinos, the ones who are in Manila or the ones who are abroad, anywhere in the world, really, we have to keep looking into what's happening now. I love Baroque and Edgar as a band.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, I don't want to listen to Baroque and Edgar 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
There are other bands. There are other Filipino acts that are really, really great right now. And I'm not going to suggest anything because I don't want to dilute the conversation with that. But, you know, if you're interested in seeing, there are so many artists that are Filipinos that are doing really great work right now. And it's up to us to find what it is that we like. I personally make abstract work. I make conceptual work. And if that's something that interests you, well, you can open up a conversation with me. That's basically it. My art, I've gotten this message or this conversation so many times now. Like, people has been saying, like, my art doesn't look Filipino. And my number one response to that is, why? What is Filipino art for you? Because that's the thing. I'm Filipino. I identify as Filipino. Therefore, the work that I make is Filipino, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's it.
You're the future, man. My heart is the future Filipino. How about that? How about that, brothers and sisters? Come on.
Let's go. Snap, snap, click, right. Click.
Let's go. Sorry,
that's the thing. That's the thing a lot with artists is that, you know, people say that, oh, artists, you're not gonna be able to feed your anak with paint. You know, what are you, anong papakain mo sa anak mo, pintura?
Just as a translation for the mixed Filipinos or
right.
Diaspora, he said, you know, what are you gonna feed your kids with art? Or how are you going, like, with your paintings, how are you gonna feed your family? So that's what the translation is. Yeah,
basically that. But a lot of people are missing out that, hey, this is an industry. People actually collect art. People pay for art. And as Filipinos, we have to divert the mindset that, okay, what does art collecting mean for me? Or what does art mean for me as a Filipino? You know, because if we want to move this creative industry forward, again, not just with just visual or painting, just with food, we have to support this. We have to create conversations about, oh, this is good art because of this and this and this and this and this and that. Just like with any other industry, it starts with where you are or where you're from. The people that are supposed to, but here's the tricky part in that. The people that are supposed to support your work are the ones where you came from. But I personally have gotten a lot more support when I'm outside of the country or with people that are not in Manila or the people that are not Filipinos. And that's such a, this one I don't have an answer for, because that's such an interesting fact to me that when you're in Manila, you have to be able to go out first and prove yourself into the world stage before they'll take you seriously. I don't know if this is normal for a lot of people.
Yeah, like, just to jump on that, like, why is it that, you know, as a Filipino, in a, you know, when it comes to the masses or the general people, they would rather have that you as an artist be validated first by other people, other ethnicities abroad, before they would acknowledge you as successful or validate your work, you know, in the motherland, in, like, in your home. Like, why is it like that?
It's like when you're trying to apply for a job, but then they're like, oh no, like, you don't have enough experience. It's like, I'm trying to get experience from you, but you won't give it to me.
I'm trying to stake my place here, but you won't accept me.
You won't give me a chance.
But yet you will, you know, give me this acclaim when I've reached success outside of here.
Yeah, I get that 100%. And to get into your job thing, this was my experience before too when I was applying. When I wasn't applying as a concept artist, I would give out my resumes, right? And then that's the first thing that they'd say is, oh, you don't have job experience. So I thought, okay, I'll just make my own work. Mm-hmm. That's how me posting in social media happened. I started creating my own projects, posted that, and then people started seeing the work. And I guess it would apply to today too. Like, if you want to push yourself as an artist or as a creative, you have to create the work, and then you have to build your own community, and then you have to build your own conversations, create that support within yourself, within your circle, and push it forward. Because really, in this world right now, that's the only way to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of people there that you would hope, like, even as fellow Filipinos, that would support you, but don't. And so that's why it's very critical to build that network, to build that community, to build that support for you, you know, as you are pursuing the type of work that you're doing and sharing it with everybody, because that kind of micro bubble that you have is integral in order to continue to feed you that energy and support in doing the type of work that you do. So, you know, with that, you know, you've shared that you've showcased around the world, and some people, let's say in the Philippines, may have slept, quote, on your work up until you were published, and you were able to be like an artist in residence in, you know, internationally. You're able to showcase and highlight your work somewhere else.
Pretty much make a name for yourself.
Yeah. Can you tell us about what it was like being a Filipino artist in this type of international landscape? You did share a story with me, you know, with your experience in Hong Kong. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So the thing with art residencies is, for those who don't know, art residencies is some sort of program where artists would be hosted by a gallery abroad or anywhere else, and they'd host you. It could be paid or it could be not paid. Just, it's a very varied system, which very questionable, but it's a really exciting experience to be able to go to another place, create work, showcase your work in that gallery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Normally, when artists go into artist residencies, it's because galleries have certain connections to galleries abroad. So they'd be supporting a artist that they like in a certain place, and then bring them to another place to move the mythology of the artist. Yeah. So what happened to me was, I personally just like to go around, at least for the last 3 years, around Asia. I've been going around Asia for inspiration. I'd be meeting people, just experiencing the life of what it's like in Thailand or in Hong Kong. And throughout my journey, I guess, I would meet certain people that are part of the industry, part of the art industry. And I am very lucky to be able to be given opportunities by those galleries. As per my last Hong Kong residency was with Nido Gallery, which was located in central Hong Kong. Amazing space. Now, because of the pandemic, they moved back to Taiwan. So their main gallery now is in Taiwan. But back then, it was in Hong Kong. And I was lucky enough to be able to show there. And they hosted me. And I really had a great experience. But there was this, to connect to that story, the day of my show, I guess, because, you know, when you're an artist, most of the time you probably just wear, it's either two things. It's either you're super eccentric looking with colorful items and just jewelry all around you, or you're probably wearing all black and as simple as you can be. That's usually the case. I'm just generalizing. So at the time of my show, as per my personality, I just wear very simple clothes. And I was going around, you know, looking into the gallery, very much proud of what I've accomplished, being able to showcase my work in Hong Kong, when a couple approached me and mistook me as the gallery help and asked me to clean some sort of something that spilled on the gallery floor.
Oh, and
which, now looking back, I was infuriated, but now I'm thinking maybe it's an honest mistake, you know.
I'm humble.
The thing is,
profiled. Let's just accept that.
No, that's the thing, like, you know, when the normal reality is, when Filipinos are abroad, the first thing that people are going to think is, oh, there might be, you know, they're working as a maid, or they're working as a nurse, which are very respectable professions, right? But at the time, I was the artist in residence, and I was infuriated, right? But looking back now, I'm actually really, really happy about it, because just last month, like almost like 2 weeks after I told you that story, the gallery told me that that couple actually bought a couple of my works, I guess. So that was like, there's like a
secure
validation right there.
The bag, y'all.
Yes, yes, just a sprinkle of guilt into that art purchase. Let's go. No, but so yeah, now I'm not angry about it. Now I'm like, hey, honest mistake, I forgive you.
When you first told me that story, I was completely horrified. I was like, how dare you people? This is literally my show. As the Filipino artist. Yeah. So for them to buy a couple of your works after, that's right. Pay me. You just pay me.
Let's go. I guess I had the full 180 too, how I viewed that experience, because that couple also put me on this Paris online show right now that's happening. It's I'm part of the curation in singleart.com. They're based in France, I think. I have to double check, but yeah, a couple of my works are now in that space.
Wow.
And hopefully it goes well. Thank you so much. Hopefully it goes well, you know, but I guess those are the, besides the all the depressing things that are happening because of COVID, I guess people are now less desensitized with doing online things. Because back then, when you think of online art or online school, you know, there's always this
negative
stigma.
Connotation, yeah.
Exactly. But now, doing that, it's like, oh,
it's the only way to operate.
Exactly. And now with these opportunities coming in, like, I am going to take full advantage of this and create much more work because of this. And that's actually, if you guys haven't yet, please do follow me on Instagram at R-U-Z-A-R. That's A-R-E-Y-O-U-Z-A-R. That's where I post most of my work. And I pride myself in having a very dedicated following there. It's not much, but that's how I like it, because the people who are there are the ones that are actually really, really there looking, supporting, and having conversations with me about the work. And if you're interested to see my work, it's really there, or my website. It's ruzar.com. But because of this whole corona thing, really, the digitalization of art, I had to figure out a way for myself on how to create art moving forward. Because when the lockdown happened, I think I've mentioned this story before. When the lockdown happened, I was my studio in Manila got quarantined. That whole area was a spot for COVID.
Oh wow.
And I couldn't come in. All of my things, my materials, I was out. I was locked out of my place for like a month or so.
Oh, wow.
And in my head, I knew I had to create something, because like, I can't just spend 2 months not doing anything, you know? So I had to put my groundwork on how would I create work with the tools that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily enough, when I was a concept artist, I was trained using digital tools, you know, Photoshop, 3D, VFX. I'd be using those tools to create the type of work that I used to make. And I thought, what if I start using these tools again, but now in the context of fine art?
Yeah.
How do I treat these softwares, these lines of code, this VFX? How do I treat this the same way that I would treat paint or brush to create an artwork? And if you're following my work, you'd see a lot more of that moving forward, because now I'm really integrating Filipino art, you know? I'm really integrating what it means to be living as a Filipino in 2020 moving forward, 2021, to be able to create the same type of mindful work that dwells within the same conversations of a gallery, but using the modern tools that we have. And I guess the fun part of it is I don't know yet what type of images I'm going to be able to make. But so far with the collection that I've been building, I've gotten some really, really good responses. A lot more people are excited about this. And funny enough, with the same motif as building a community, I've been bringing along a lot of, I guess they like the idea of creating digital work that a lot of local artists are starting to incorporate this type of idea of, hey, what if we start creating this with this type of program? What if we use code? And the exciting part is seeing much more people exploring and experimenting about what art is to them. And that's awesome. I really, really love that. Yeah.
That's great, because I'm sure that was kind of, you know, with your own journey, that was really challenging to overcome. First of all, having to go against these critics who don't identify your art as Filipino enough and continuing to push forward with what you know is supposed to be, you know, future forward art as a Filipino artist with creating, you know, fine art pieces. And then integrating some digital components into that. Now you have, you know, locals who are inspired by that work and are also interested in continuing that type of work and pursuing that line of work. That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there is no lack of amazing Filipino artists that are living today.
Yeah.
A year ago, I was lucky enough to be able to curate a show in Deutsche Bank, Philippines, for a for their BGC office, and their what do you call it, their lobby, I guess. Like I was able to curate a bunch of Filipino living contemporary artists, and dude, I'm telling you, if you just look, there's amazing work. Amazing work. Like you have just the idea that Filipinos are doing this right now is insane. Why is this not being showcased all around the world? Why is this guy not the best new artist, you know? And that's really the thing that we have to start moving forward to. Like, we have to have a more nurturing landscape for artists to explore or just create art that breaks this current ecosystem, you know? And I guess the last time we talked, we were enjoying just different examples of how the Filipino is being highlighted in media. And I think that's also a part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. The more that we have these types of work, the more that we see it in television or in Netflix, you know, of mga the shows highlighting different Filipino culture or just the language itself. Because I know they're doing this because we're really big on social media.
Yeah, we are the, I would say, in the Philippines is like the most social media or tech savvy consumers in Asia.
Yes.
And definitely, you know, Filipinos in general are global. You know, we're not just in the Philippines.
We're global.
We're global.
We're global.
So let's go. Come on. Let's see more of these Filipino stories, these Filipino That's narratives, true. These Filipino faces, these Filipino talents. Let's go.
Yes, exactly.
Let's get this to Tinapay.
Yeah.
Let's get that. Oh my God. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
That Tinapay. Girl, you're a genius. I love that. Tausaw mo sa kape.
Yes.
Amazing.
Exactly.
If you don't mind, I'm going to start using that, yeah?
Yes.
Amazing.
All love, man. That's what we want All to promote here on the podcast. Like, for some of you who are listening, you know, who are artists or creatives, right?
Yeah.
Let's show support for each other, like, as fellow Filipinos. I think for too long, there hasn't been enough love.
Yeah.
And that's what we are really trying to push forward with, not only with this podcast, but with our, you know, Filipino Fridays fam, with our community,
right?
Exactly.
Like, walang crab mentality dito. There's no crab mentality here. Walang ano, walang bitter, walang
sure,
walang nega, not allowed. No negative people allowed, no bad vibes allowed, no bitter people allowed. You know, when it comes to fellow Filipinos, let's raise each other up, let's support each other.
Definitely.
You know? And I know you kind of sort of answered my question, but I'm just going to, you know, ask it outright. Like, what do you hope to see happen in the future for artists who are breaking the mold, you know, becoming bold with being more experimental and being understood in the art form that they create, especially when it comes to the innovative artists in the Philippines? Like, what do you hope to see in the future with these fellow Filipino artists?
Right. For Filipino artists as a whole, it's no question we have to keep creating. That's really it. We have to keep making our work. We have to keep cooking. We have to make, we have to keep painting. We have to keep doing music. We have to make the, we have to do the art first. We have to share this art. And then we share this to the audience. And as an audience, we have to be, as a Filipino audience, even to myself and for everyone who's listening, I think the key thing here is we have to be able to be in this mind space where we're actively looking and supporting and enjoying these types of work. To be able to not just listen to the good old days, but open our ears into the next sound that's coming out of the Philippines.
The next generation.
The next generation.
Yeah.
We have to listen to new music. We have to look, we have to eat new food. We have to look at new art. We have to start collecting art if we're economically in a good space. We have to start collecting art because that's the only way we can push everything else forward. And if you haven't started yet, there's a lot of resources online for you to just put yourself into this narrative of Filipino art or contemporary art as a whole.
Yeah.
And how do we able to support this? You know, you share art. That's already a big thing. You talk about art. You make art on your own. A lot of people say, oh, I can't draw. No. You can draw. It's just that you think that your drawings are bad, but it's not. that's really the thing here. It's that's the stigma that a lot of people have and carrying themselves. But again, this is why this podcast resonated with me. Is I feel like the only way to move forward is to start creating communities, expand the conversation such as this, and we have to continue and grow and nurture everything that's happening in the art world or in just everything that's happening to Filipinos right now.
Yes.
Yep. Period.
Period.
That was amazing. Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we're not going to support each other, when? Like, that's why we have to do that now, because our culture, preserving our culture and our relationship with each other and the community is, it's integral for us to keep that love together because,
exactly.
You know, when I think of the other cultures, I'm going to use Chinese just because that's something I know quite closely. The reason why generation to generation, their culture is so well preserved from like history, right? Like 500 years and more centuries, is because of that type of love and community and support that they've had through the years for each other. That mm-hmm. is something that we need to learn as Filipinos. And part of where that type of disconnection happened for us is, of course, when we were colonized, right? It also doesn't help that we're also spread out in different islands, right? And so through the years, there's been that disconnection, not only among each other in the Philippines, but even disconnection with fellow Filipinos overseas, right? So that is something that we're hoping, you know, with
also with this podcast, we kind of bridge the gap there, try to provide some perspectives where we understand each other so that it could really set up the foundation for us to all just support each other and understand each other.
And heal.
And yeah, and heal as a culture, as a nation. So
gotta bring the islands together.
That's true. That's a big conversation too, you know, the whole colonization part, because of the years and years of us being stripped away from who we are naturally as Filipinos. We have a long way to go to be able to pull back what it is that what makes us tick, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, in a positive note, I think that's the exciting part of it. Because, mm-hmm. again, the conversation is open and the definition is up for the taking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best part of any, I personally think of any artwork. That's why a lot of artists say, I don't know when my art is going to be done. It's just, it's never done. Because mm-hmm. that's true. You know, art is always moving forward, just like our culture. Our culture is always open and we have to figure out what makes it tick. You do research, you talk to your lola about how their experience was, and you learn so much more about culturally what makes us Filipinos, especially with the abundance of stories and mythology that the Filipinos have beyond the usual aswang or yeah. beyond the usual tikbalang. There's so much more creatures. Like, we can actually have our own Norse mythology if someone was you know, hardworking enough to create that. Yeah, to collect everything. And there has been a lot of efforts of doing that. There's been a lot of efforts in doing that. And I think, you know, as Filipinos, we have not just with food, like the history of us, we have to keep collecting and sharing and enjoying these conversations, especially now that we are in the world stage.
Yeah.
Because of the internet, everything's in the world stage. Mm-hmm. And we have to take our spot.
Yeah. That's right.
Click, 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 click.
Let's go. Yeah, and like this is like a perfect opportunity because, yeah, you know, not only with being in COVID space, but in terms of being in the age of information and being online, there's just so many ways that somebody could explore their roots and their origins a little deeper. And perhaps, you know, even aside from that, when it comes to somebody who is a creative and somebody who is a Filipino creative, they're able to find these networks, they're able to find these inspirations online, and then they're able to also apply it into their own influences and mm-hmm. And continue to do to put in the work, make and create art, and really put their heart and soul behind that, not only as a Filipino but as somebody, you know, who's an artist.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
If you're a Filipino and you're not living in Manila, the next time you do come back, it's nice to get a tattoo of the Alibata or whatever. But, you know, maybe.
Collect some, you know, Arnie sticks.
Yeah, collect some Arnie sticks.
Those, like, tourists, like, draws for somebody exactly. from outside of the
exactly. It's one way to be a tourist, it's another to be a traveler. And if you're gonna travel, facts. And if you're gonna travel back to the Philippines and actually travel to learn your roots, you know, be in that space. Be open to figuring out what else is the Filipino doing.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you insert yourself or you bring yourself into that story, and how what you take away? Because when we explore these things, we are indefinitely going to influence this. We're going to get influence moving forward, and we're going to bring that with us, you know. So, for example, you guys that are watching here right now or listening here right now, if you look at my work and you think and you already know that I'm Filipino, the thing is, you're going to think that Filipino work looks like this. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because now people are going to start, you know, having this conversation with you. Oh, what do you think of Filipino art? Oh, I know this artist. He does this, that, and this, and this, and that. Oh, he does this weird-ass music. He does this splatters on paper, and it's actually really fucking cool. And yeah, we have to keep saying that. We have to just like give out information to other people. This is what it looks like right now. Only way to move forward.
That's amazing. Yeah, look, we're, you know, just to be clear, and I always do a disclaimer, we don't ever knock. If you want to go get a tribal tattoo whenever you go home, like, you do, yeah. You, right? Live your truth. You want to go get those, like, those knives.
Get a hook on your...
Yeah, like, that, like, that's fine. We support you. Like, live your life. But we also caution that also look deeper into, you know, your history and the roots and
exactly
and how these stories and how being in this land you know is a part of your life, right? It's right.
I think it's kind of like a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
like we all have to be Alice and then just jump into the rabbit hole. That's the thing.
Exactly.
And that's why I like to keep my work under monikers, because I like the when people experience my work, I want it to be as direct as it could be. You know, if you take away the artist, let's say me, if you know my work and think that the artist that made this is named 0270501, you're not going to be putting on an image of a person in your head.
There's no bias. There's no preconceived. Exactly. Yeah. That's no
smart. I just,
yeah.
Yeah. So when you experience the work, it becomes not what the artists feel or think. That's why they made this work. It's about how you yourself perceives this work. And that's one of the reasons why I don't have an actual name in my work. But, yeah, besides the fact that the numbers are actually a really, really fun way to know if people vibe with you or not. Like, if they really like me, they'll remember the bunch of numbers, the 0270501, and they'll mention it. And that's cool. And I like that. And that means I'm going to spend more time with this person, because it's actually a very conducive relationship to have. But if not, you know, that's okay. That's okay. And it helps me figure out where to spend my efforts on, where to bring my energy into, you know, protect the energy that I bring into the world. Because that's really, you have to protect your creativity. Yeah. You have to keep doing what you're doing and not be discouraged about anything else that's happening in the world. Although it is very difficult right now, I gotta say, you know, that's... But the fun part is everyone's down. So
yeah,
if everyone's down, no way from here but up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I can only associate it out of my own like experiences and my own knowledge. But yeah, when I think of like musical artists like her and
Saweetie.
So. Yeah, well, and I more so mean like Daft Punk and Gorilla Boys, like, you know, by pushing the art forward, it's about the art, it's about who receives the art and what it means to them. It's not about the person. And right. So like for her especially, like, you know, nobody knew who she was at first. Like, she just really wanted to focus on her lyrics and her music and her sound. And then it's only when she started getting like all this commercial success that people are like, okay, who is this person? And then she's like, okay, everybody, like, hi, it's me, but I'm going to wear some shades because, like, you know, for me, it's integral that we focus on the music and we focus on the art, right? And that's why it's important for me to push that forward as an artist. Yeah,
that's beautiful, really.
Yeah, that's the only other comparison or association I can make it from, like, you know, from my own knowledge. But of course, like, it's right in the same plane. It's very aligned in that way. Like, for you, it's like, I don't need to put my face out there. My name doesn't need to be out there. It's about my message through my work. It's about my creation, and this is really what is the most important part, right? And
exactly.
how it resonates with you as the recipient of that blessing. Right. Mm-hmm. So
I agree. I think to go in depth into that, like, art has always been the counterculture. that's where art lies. When Andy Warhol became Andy Warhol, there was no such thing as that type of celebrity worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And nowadays, everyone's a celebrity.
Mm.
You're a celebrity. A couple of likes and you're already a celebrity.
Exactly.
Everyone's an influencer. So how do you manage through that when everyone's an influencer?
Mm.
I remember there's this quote from The Incredibles that I really, really love. You know Syndrome?
Yeah.
From The Incredibles. He said, when everyone's super, no one is.
True.
That's the thing that we have to figure out. Like, it's nice to know what's going on into the world and be part of the what's the bandwagon right now, you know. But if you want to push through the perspectives, you gotta start creating something new.
Be an original.
You gotta start mixing Filipino food with with Indian food maybe.
Yeah, that's
it's like, true to you.
That for the food episode, you know, his goal was to present Filipino food in an approachable, globally, universally accepted, format. That way people will be more enticed to dive into it, right? So he really goes into that. It's like, in order for us to get it to a way where it is going to be universally accepted or known, it needs to be presented in a way that
definitely
we'll be able to appreciate, right? So anyways, yeah, did you have any other notes or questions?
I mean, at the end of the day, everything is like what they say, in the eye of the beholder. Like, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So it depends on your audience and it depends on who we want to reach out to. But as long as you just, if it's just one single person you reach or touch, then that's, you're already done. You did your work.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's nice to have very low expectations.
My thing is no expectation. Like, hope for the best and expect the worst. That's all.
Exactly. Very stoic of you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I personally, you know, to add to what your other episode said, I think to summarize all of the blabbering that I've done so far for the past hour, I guess for me, it's just continuing the conversation. That's the summary of it. We have to be able to keep talking and making these types of works so we can explore more and experiment on what's going to be moving forward. That's it for me.
And being open-minded to continue to have these conversations. Yeah. Walang nega pwede dito. Nah. I'm your sassy tita. I don't approve. No negative vibes. None of these trolls. None of these keyboard warriors.
Walang bashers.
Yeah. No bashers allowed. It's all Filipino love here.
Yeah, there's a big. Do you guys talk to Filipinos often?
Yeah, oh, family. Yeah.
Family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot. Just a little tangent that I've been thinking about a lot lately. You know, the Filipino vocabulary, it's very negative, isn't it? Like, when people, I don't know if you guys have heard of this lately, but a lot of people say sana all.
Well.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. It was. all love to your sister. But you know, I recently realized that it's such a difficult word to throw around.
It's discouraging.
It's very discouraging.
Yep. Okay, so translation for y'all who don't understand Tagalog, sana all is like, if only for everyone. Like, for example, like, oh, she got a boyfriend, or he got married.
Sana all jowa.
Or this person's successful. Oh, if only for everyone. Like, there's a tone of sarcasm to it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, like really? Like, why can't we just be happy Disclaimer, my little cousins taught me that in the Philippines. And I brought it to Canada. I'm so sorry.
You're part of the problem, man. I'm kidding. No, but, you know.
Maybe we'll make merch. We'll make merch that says, let's get this tinapay.
Sana all tinapay.
Put that on a shirt. Let's get this tinapay. What up, what up? How you doing? It's your boy.
I love it.
Get that tinapay.
That's so good. But yeah, you're right. There's always like some sort of like negative connotation with some like the colloquial words in the Philippines, right?
To explain to the people who are not familiar with it, this is a phrase that a lot of Filipinos throw out on. Like, sana all basically means your achievements. I want those achievements. I wish I had those achievements, but I have as an excuse that I don't have those achievements. Therefore, I'm not going to be happy about it.
Yeah.
That's what it basically means, you know?
It makes me sad.
I don't like it because it does not further the conversation.
Yeah.
It stops it there, you know? When you share something, oh, I made this new music. And it's like, sana all. I'm like, all right.
I guess we're naming this episode, sana all.
Yeah, this is
Sana all with DJ Sarge.
Sana all. Now, please, though. Oh man.
No, we won't do that. I already had a titled episode picked out for you, and you'll be quite pleased.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
But the thing is that happens a lot, right? Sanaol is not an outlier. Yeah. This is it's common. There's a lot of phrases that are like that in the Filipino vocabulary, and I think we have to be mindful moving forward about which words are we going to be using, because language matters, guys.
Yes,
language is one of the first thing that's going to affect the person in front of you. Mm-hmm. What you say is what they feel. And you have to think about that.
See, I want to touch on that, but I know I'm going to trigger a lot of people. And don't worry, y'all. We're going to save this word or language, this topic, for some other episode coming up. But the language, when you say language, right, there's this long-standing, it's occurred maybe the last 5 years, you know. Mm-hmm. The language of Filipino versus Philippine X. Right. So that, like, nothing gets the blood boiling more for some Filipinos out there when it comes to that type of language. Like what you said, right? Like, language matters, and how that would affect whoever is using them or how somebody identify as, right? Oh, man, I have to share an example. You know, recently we had some friends of ours, right? And they were published using the X. And it just created this wave of like toxic and vitriol of negativity from, you know, people that were based in the Philippines because of using the X instead of the O. And that, like, we're obviously going to save that for another episode. You guys watch out. That's going to be a hot one.
We're just giving a teaser right now.
We're just going to.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the thing that we, you know, that we want to have a conversation about or open up the lines of communication. It's hot. I have to take off my sweater.
I'm eating.
Grabe.
Pinapawisan ako sa kaka-stress.
Kaka-nosebleed naman.
Let's make this episode viral. What do you guys think? Comment on the video below.
Well, I'm cutting this part. This is like us. I know. I would trigger so many people. But that's why I have to save it for later.
Right. Save it for a much more expert. Honestly, if you strip away all the colonialism, Filipinos have been one of the most gender fluid cultures ever.
Exactly. Pre-colonial, we're gender fluid. We were polyamorous.
Exactly. we had much more adventurous and exciting times before the Spanish came in. It's like, oh, sex is bad. Before Catholicism came in, we were pretty funky. Yeah, we were pretty funky.
Yeah.
Everything was communal. The leaders were transgenders, you know. Sometimes just generally female or feminine. That's who are the people who were leading the tribes. And we were very progressive early on.
Yeah. What happened?
Hear about this. What happened?
There's a quote I want to share with you. Like when you were talking, I follow this account called like Dr. Therapy Knife. And there was a note here. It's unknown who the origin, but she said to colonize a people's mind, you must first demonize their culture and their traditions.
That's true.
That's what happened to us.
That's exactly what happened. Until now, people think, you know, there's this self-racism happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like until now we put ourselves down. Until now we bring our achievements away from the Filipino narrative. It's always the white people who are great, or it's always this who are great. But in fact, we're also great. You know,
Yeah, thank you. Like, just to kind of wrap up, we always like to do something fun, as you know.
Okay.
All the episodes. You know, for whoever is interested in visiting the Philippines and who hasn't gotten an opportunity to come and visit, right? What places would you recommend that they check out to be a little bit more in tune or get in touch with their culture? Like, would you recommend? Yeah, which places?
To be a traveler and not to be a tourist.
Mm-hmm. Ah, I see. Okay. Well, as per of this recording, I literally have nothing to recommend.
You're right.
I love it. When the virus subsides and there's a vaccine. Yeah.
When it subsides, I'll let you know. All right. But right now, everything is down. Everything is closed. Everything is just gone. All right. But hopefully I could answer that question though in the next few months. Hopefully I can give you.
Yeah.
But sadly enough, I'm very sorry to say.
That's all right. No problem. Yeah. Well, okay. Lastly, like for, you know, you mentioned The Incredibles earlier. Can you share with us like some of your like influences in the way that you do music and art? Like, you know, what are some influences that you have, creative influences?
Oh, wow. I forgot that this was a question. honestly, there's a lot. I pride myself in having too many tabs open.
Yeah.
You know, whatever tab management you give me, I will always have 10 windows with 50 tabs each in my Google Chrome browser. And that's always been my norm. It's just I would scroll. It's just like how I would flip into television shows when I was younger. I would flip through tabs in different topics, and just that's how I would research things. It's so just different things. So if you ask me about my influences, I love Kanye West, Kendrick Lamar, Frank Ocean, but I also love James Turrell, Takashi Murakami, S. Devlin, you know, just too many different artists and people. But to sum it down, at least for the people that I've mentioned, Kanye West, Kendrick Lamar, Frank Ocean, I think I'm going to fuck this up, but Olafur Eliasson, James Turrell, Takashi Murakami, S. Devlin. If you know these artists, what makes me look up to them as my influences is how intuitive they are in making their art and how well they translate when they're bouncing genres or industries. You know how, for example, if you know James Turrell, he's the guy who makes lighting sculptures.
Mm-hmm.
Very spiritual, very like fine art as its peak, fine installation art, you know, very much celebrated Guggenheim Museum artist. But also, he made the installation in Drake's music video in the song "Call Me on My Cell Phone."
Oh yeah.
That's that Play artist.
You need my exactly. Come on, get in there. Call me on my cell phone.
Let's go, sing it with me. Yeah. No, but you know, you get what I mean, right? Like,
yeah,
the fact that that artist can translate in Guggenheim Museum. Exactly. That's what my influence is. Like how Kanye West basically transcends music into fashion and into art himself. Kendrick Lamar on how he transcended his previous hip hop work to creating a jazz hip hop masterpiece and being a celebrated artist of its time. Frank Ocean and his genre bending bullshit. No question. Just being able to create those types of work and to translate genres, industries, and how they could make art and shape perspectives and further conversations and whatever they're doing. You know, there's so many things that these people are way ahead on that if once they start talking about it, people are going to think they're crazy. Like,
but they're true masters. Yeah. When you think about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's so many topics here that I don't want to start because we might end up having 3 more hours of conversations, but I guess here's a hot one that I've been really into. Just to summarize it super quickly. Right now, there is a big question about, copyright. How, for example, in music, you guys heard of the Pharrell case, right? How Pharrell got sued for so many millions of dollars by sounding or just having the same vibe of a different song.
Mm.
He didn't sample any other song. He didn't do anything. He didn't use that song that they were in question with, but they got sued and the opposing party won because they had the same vibe.
Mm.
You know, and now people can get sued for having the same vibe of a song. Which basically changed. Now this is a tricky thing in the industry right now because that's a big conversation. Like, what is influence? What is sampling? How does it work? When in reality, if you really strip it down, the whole copyright thing, this was made by corporations. Actually, I'm just going to single it out in one corporation. This was made so Disney can make more money. People think right now, oh, you know, it's to help these smaller artists so they don't get ripped off with other companies like Forever 21 stealing that guy's design. That's nice. You know, that's a really nice topic. But if you think about it, creative work shouldn't be owned by one person, don't you think? Because when you create something, when you create an artwork or like music, for sure this is going to be heard by more than one person. And you can't really control that influence moving forward.
Yeah.
You have to think it in the context of that. These works are community driven. You know, they exist in a platform where a lot of people are going to listen to it and a lot of people are going to be influenced to it moving forward. So it's part of our nature. So who are we to say that this singular artwork or this singular music belongs to one person and one person only?
Yeah.
When that person probably got influenced by another person, you know?
That's true.
I know this is such a hard topic to decipher because there's like so many definitions, so many legal jargons that you have to go through. But I'm just saying right now, when this shit changes, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a big one. The whole creativity legal landscape.
Hot take, y'all.
We got insiders right here. Inside scoop on the industry.
Okay,
lastly, this is why I personally feel that when I die, my artworks or everything that I've made aren't going to be in Creative Commons.
Aww. Right?
I'm going to create an ID that says I'm a Creative Common donation person, like how you donate your organs.
Yeah.
When I die, all of my works are going to be for yours to the taking. Or even now, actually, just take it.
For everyone.
Yeah, as long as it's not, you know, my physical paintings, buy it. But anything else, like, go ahead and sample it, reference it, whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Well, to end it off, I'm going to ask you this because this is funny. What's your favorite Filipino word?
Your favorite Filipino slang.
You know what you don't like?
What's my favorite word that I like? I guess, okay. Shout out to my homie right there, Tinapay.
Let's get it.
It's Tinapay right now. That's the best thing. Get that Tinapay.
Gotta get this Tinapay.
Let's get this Tinapay.
That's awesome. With that said, please, DJ Zarb, tell our listeners where they can find you. It's more than just me.